Is there anybody really, really new here that doesn't know who is Lord Ramachandra? I've had audiences like that, so I have to ask. Everybody knows. That's a no back there? Huh? Okay. This time of the year, when it's Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, I find some satisfaction in sounds like the world's going to end or something. In the course of travel as a sannyasi, it's not one of the top 10 questions, but sometimes people ask, you always speak about Krishna, but your mantra is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So where's the Rama part? So I like, this is the Rama part of the Hare Krishna mantra. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada writes, what's true, some people ask, or rather they argue, the Rama in Hare Krishna mantra means Lord Ramachandra. And others argue, no. It's Balaram. And they argue back and forth. And Prabhupada's comment is they're both right. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the ninth canto, where the life of Lord Ramachandra and his pastimes are described in two summary chapters, Shukadeva Goswami begins right away by explaining that Ramachandra and Lakshman and Bharata and Shatrughna, they're all in the Vishnu Tattva category. Do you know what that means, Vishnu Tattva? I'm looking at you. Vishnu Tattva means? Yeah, forms of Vishnu. And distinct from forms of Vishnu are us, because we're called jivas, right? Living entity is called jiva, or jiva tattva. Tattva means category or truth. So we're jivas, and he's not one of us, and we're not like him. It's specifically important because Ramachandra appears, we're going to hear in these prayers, specifically spoken by Hanuman, that he appears as if a human. His pastimes are very human-like, and his form is certainly human-like, but he's not human, or he's not one of us. He's Vishnu Tattva. So he's one of the Lila avatars, or forms of the Lord that perform wonderful transcendental pastimes for the purpose of, one of the purposes is attracting the hearts and the minds of all who are living in this dark, covered material realm, to go again to the position of light or transcendence or the spiritual realm. He performs pastimes like he does in the spiritual world, but there are unique features of his pastimes that aren't present in the spiritual world. So I'm going to do a little bit of a Brahma Samhita lesson here first. Two parts of Sri Brahma Samhita. There's one of the verses in Brahma Samhita is describing the realm of Goloka. And to describe the realm of Goloka, it contrasts the lower realms. Goloka nami nijadami talesa tasya devi maheshu hari damashu teshu teshu. So the verse says, actually Bhaktisiddhanta says, Lord Brahma is looking up and describing what he sees as he looks up, because he's in the topmost position of Devi Dham. Devi Dham means this created cosmos. And above this created realm, beyond the coverings of this universe, within the region of the causal ocean, is Mahesh Dham. And above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham. And above Hari Dham is Goloka Dham. And the position of Ayodhya, the eternal residence of Ram, is in the topmost region of Hari Dham or Vaikuntha realm. It's topmost in terms of the intimacy. It's not of the same intimacy as Goloka Dham, but in Ayodhya there's an intimacy that surpasses that of Vaikuntha. And the pastimes that Ram displays when he appears in this world are very unique like that. There's pastimes of birth. Ram Chandra makes his appearance. In Ayodhya, there's no birth. But Dasarath and Kaushalya, they have the sense that Ram is their son. But there's no birth. Same in Goloka. Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they have the sense that Krishna is their son, but there's no birth. There's no pastime. But here, there's a pastime. In the spiritual world, there's no demons. What Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls it, I hope I can use Sanskrit terms and it's not going to be disturbing or lose people. He calls it Vibrahma Vilas. All living entities in this material world have four defects. One of these, they're prone to make mistakes. Do you ever make mistakes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does your brother make more mistakes than you? Depends what time of day they're talking. So that Sanskrit term is Bhrama. It sounds like Lord Brahma, but it's not. It's Brahma. It means to make a mistake. Vibrahma means big mistake. And Vilas means pastime. And Vilas has a special connotation. Just like Lila means pastime. But Vilas has a meaning of something that's like very sweet and relishable. Kind of pastime. Vibrahma Vilas. Seeming error, he calls it. Seeming error. Where, like Mother Jasoda looks inside Krishna's mouth to see if he's eaten dirt. And what does she see? She sees the whole cosmic manifestation. One of our acharyas says that she saw the same thing that Arjuna saw on the Kurukshetra battlefield. And what did Arjuna do? And Mother Jasoda went, I must be seeing things. I better lie down. I'm feeling faint. But her love, parental love, was so strong, she forgot what she saw. She just forgot what she saw. That's the influence of Yoga Maya. So that's this Vibhrama Vilas feature. So in Goloka, we'll get, it's similar to, because it's explicit for Goloka in Brahma Samhita, it's similar in Ayodhya. In Goloka, there's no demons. But there's the sense of demons. Because Gopal Champu, there's a description that sometimes in Vaikuntha, sometimes in Goloka, there's a big sign, like for us it would be like a billboard, a picture of Agasura, and everyone goes, ah, there's a demon. They become very afraid, and then Krishna, and then the sign disappears. Or someone comes running through Vrindavan, Aristasura is coming. The earth is trembling. Look out. Here comes a demon. And then that person just disappears. There's no demon. But everyone, there's the sense of, and here there's demons. According to what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says. So certainly Ram encountered demons. Lots of them. Hordes of them. In Ayodhya, there's no demons, but Ram is there to protect Ayodhya and all the citizens so that there'll be no worry for danger is coming because Ram is very powerful. And similar other, you'll hear from these prayers, similar other features that Hanuman understands about Krishna, about Ram, because he's a lover of Ram. And one who's a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can understand the Personality of Godhead. Truths become disclosed to him. So these, I'm just going to take you through 8 verses from chapter 19 of the 5th canto. And the 5th canto, the latter part of the 5th canto, is description of the universe. In case you wanted to know what the universe is made up of, just read the 5th canto and have a dictionary by your side and read it about 15 or 20 times, and then the picture may become a little more clear. That's an assignment that Prabhupada gave Sataputta some 30 years later. Sataputta produced a picture of the universe for the Vedic Planetarium according to the 5th canto and other reference materials. And a little newsflash from Mayapur. We saw, our GBC members saw, and it's going to be, you know, moving around North America, a little video clip prepared by a really talented Mataji. But part of it is the devotees who have been working very diligently for a number of years to produce what Prabhupada wanted, a model of the structure of the universe hanging like a chandelier from one of the domes of the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. And you'll get at least an animated video glimpse of what they're planning. And what I heard from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was when they submitted the plan to some fabricators, the number was pretty high of what it's going to cost to make one. But just to at least see what it's going to look like, assuming they can find the funds to build it, because Prabhupada wanted it to be built, I'm sure it'll be built. Hopefully in our lifetime. Hopefully real soon. Part of that cosmology is a description of Jambudvipa. And if you read the fifth canto, or if you read any material that's trying to unpack the message of the fifth canto, Jambudvipa is a very important part. And part of Jambudvipa is where Hanuman resides, in Kim Purusha Varsha. Towards the end of Valmiki Ramayana, when Ram is sending the Janak, and then the various people have come for his coronation ceremony and so forth, the Vanaras are sent back to Rishimukh Mountain, and when bidding Hanuman farewell, Hanuman makes this request that you've given me my service, and it's going to be very difficult to bear your separation, but I just ask this one benediction that for as long as I forget exactly how he words it, for as long as this earth exists, please give me a place to live in the heavenly regions where there are devotees of yours who are simply happy, delighted in singing your glories endlessly. And Ram says, so be it. And after Ram returns, he leaves Hanuman to remain in this universe to constantly sing his glories, which shall, according to what Ram says in Ramayana, as long as there are the hills and mountains are standing and the rivers are flowing and the cosmic manifestation exists, may you live and sing my glories. So these are some of those glories sung by the personality, said about the personality of Godhead by Hanuman. You like Hanuman? Can I ask you some questions about Hanuman? Okay. Who's Hanuman the son of?
Kesari.
Huh?
Kesari is a monkey.
He's a monkey. But who is he the son of?
Kesari is a monkey.
He's a son of Vayu. Vayu. And who is Vayu?
He's the wind god.
Wind god. So because he's the son of the wind god, he has great power to jump long distances, like you see in this painting right here. In fact, Hanuman, when he was just very little, he saw in the sky a ball, and he wanted to play with the ball. Except it was the sun, so it was very far away. So he leaped to get the ball to play with, and he was flying and soaring through the air very, very fast, like the wind. And when Indra saw this creature flying and soaring through space, he thought, uh-oh, maybe he's trying to take over in the heavenly regions. So he sent a thunderbolt and hit Hanuman in the jaw, and he fell to the ground and was stunned. And Vayu came and revived him, and he had the benediction that he wouldn't even remember that he had this ability until someone spoke and reminded him of that ability. And that happened later in Ramayana's pastimes. And he used that skill of jumping long distances, of course, to go all the way to Lanka to find Sita. And then he went back again, twice, because Lakshman was hit by a very powerful mystic weapon by Indrajit, his Shakti Shela weapon. And Lakshman was unconscious, and a physician said, well, I know how to revive in his consciousness, but I need a certain herb, and I know where it can be found. It's on such and such mountain, but it's very far away. And everyone turned to Hanuman. Hanuman can go get it. Describe to him the herb. So Hanuman, in a giant leap, went to that place and couldn't find out which herb it was. So he brought the mountain. And when the herb was administered, Lakshmana again became conscious, and the battle resumed. So, in addition to being the son of Vayu, he had many abilities. He had mystic powers by which he could assume different forms. When he first met Ram, he was sent by Sugriva assuming the form of a mendicant brahmana. And sometimes he could make his body very, very, very big, and sometimes very, very small. He was a mystical person. But in addition, he had incredible ministerial powers. We're going to hear a little bit about that. So here's the first of the eight verses we're going to review. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king," he's speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, "Kim Purusha Varsha, the great in Kim Purusha Varsha, the great devotee Hanuman is always engaged with the inhabitants of that land in devotional service to Lord Ramachandra, the elder brother of Lakshmana and dear husband of Sita Devi." There's Hanuman with his really big form, and there in the palm of his hand is Lord Ramachandra. And he loves singing Ram's praises. Often he's pictured with these musical instruments, singing and singing and singing prayers. Here it says mantras. "A host of Gandharvas is always engaged in chanting the glories of Lord Ramachandra. That chanting is always extremely auspicious. Hanumanji and Artushena, the chief person in Kim Purusha Varsha, constantly hear those glories with complete attention." Hanuman chants the following mantras. Front row seat, huh? I can't see you. I can put my laptop up. Okay. So these are special prayers. Prabhupada has chosen to translate this as mantras. They're more like stotras or that kind of prayer. There's a painting of Hanuman first meeting Ram after he showed his form of a brahmana, and just hearing Ram speak and being in his presence, he immediately understood there's no need for disguise. There's nothing to worry about these two personalities. He could understand it right away. His devotion to Ram immediately overflowed. And so dear did he become to Ram that when it came time to seek out Sita, Ram knew he would be successful and entrusted his personal ring to Hanuman to show to Sita, to take away any apprehension or fear that this was some trick, but actually he's a messenger of Ram. Very, very dear was Hanuman to Ram, and of course Ram to Hanuman. So here's the first of the verses. It begins, "Om Namo Bhagavate Uttama Shlokaya Nama Arya Lakshana Shila Vritaya," and so forth. "Let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija Mantra Omkara." Okay, one of you three boys, do you know what Omkara is?
Mantra. I think it's like some form of,
I think
it's like a mantra.
Yeah, it's some form of mantra. Either of you know anything additional? Not sure. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Pranavak sarvavedeshu." Pranava is another name of Omkara, just like this verse begins, Om. And the sound of Om is Omkara. And Om, and there's other similar syllables that don't have any direct literal translation, but they're an address of the Supreme Lord, specifically an address of His Brahman feature, and they're sacred sounds. This word bija means seed. They're seed syllables that are used to invoke or address the Supreme Lord. Now, in conventional language, not transcendental language, if you see somebody some distance, there's that small boy playing, you say, hey. Or in New York, it's, yo. And you're not saying the person's name, you're just indicating, you know, hey, you. Something like that. Om is addressing the personality of Godhead without identifying yet His name. So here is Om. Namo Bhagavate Uttama Shlokaya. Like we have Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Om is the Omkar, and then we say His name, Vasudev. And Vasudevaya means unto Vasudev. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om is that Omkar. So let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija Mantra Omkar. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, who is the best amongst the highly elevated personalities. Your lordship is the reservoir of all the good qualities of the Aryans, or people who are advanced. The people who are advanced, and there's the best of all the people who are advanced. And that's Ramachandra. Your character and behavior are always consistent, and you always control your senses and mind, acting just like an ordinary human being. You exhibit exemplary character to teach others how to behave. For each time, each of the Leela avatars, we have 10 principal avatars. They're very well known and popular. Das avatar, you're familiar. Or one of them is Ramchandra. And each one of them has something specific or specialized or a uniqueness about them. And Ramchandra's uniqueness is exhibiting the character of an ideal king. The famous phrase, Ram Raja. The rule of the ideal king, Ramachandra. And people long for the day, once again, when Rama Raja, the qualities of a good king like Ram, can lead the world. Or lead some group of people, at least. So he teaches ideal character, because a king has to set ideal character. And that way people have a standard to follow. There is a touchstone that can be used to examine the quality of gold, but you are like a touchstone that can verify all good qualities. You are worshipped by Brahmanas, who are the foremost of all devotees. You are the Supreme Person. You, the Supreme Person, are the King of Kings, and therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Hanuman understands very clearly Ram's position as the personality of Godhead. If you see a depiction of the Das Avatars, and you can't read the script underneath it because it's in some language. This is me speaking anyways. Some language you can't understand. It's really easy to know who is Ram. He's carrying the bow. Parshuram is carrying the chopper. Laman is holding the umbrella and the kamandalu. Krishna is holding the flute. Balaram is holding the plow. So they each have their symbols that indicate the personality, and Ram is holding his bow because with his bow he was giving protection. The king gives protection to the citizens, in many cases the brahmanas who are being harassed by the rakshasas in the forest while he was in Dantak forest. And although his pastimes were human-like, he also exhibited power that was superhuman. He exhibited his, like Krishna did, Krishna exhibited divinity, yet people, because of their love for him, accepted him as one of them. Now, that kind of position of accepting Narayana as one of them is not true in Vaikuntha. In Ayodhya, it's more accepting him like one of us. And in Goloka, it's just one of us. There's no conception of divinity. It's that, even if he shows it. When he shows it. So here, I like this nice painting. Very beautifully painted painting. On the occasion of the Swayamvar of Sita, there she is holding a garland ready to place the garland around the neck of Ram and accept him as her husband. Janak sitting on the throne. And this bow, huge bow, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it took 300 men putting the bow on a cart with wheels to move it. And the challenge was any suitor of Sita had to pick up the bow and string the bow. No, they couldn't even pick it up. It was too heavy. And when Ramchandra came, you remember, Vishwamitra wanted him to come with him to the forest to kill demons, and his father was saying, he's just a boy. He's just turning teenage, and how's he going to fight powerful rakshasas? Let me go. I'm very strong. I'm very powerful. I bring my whole army. We'll take care of the rakshasas. So in other words, he was, although young, exhibiting such extreme power. Not only he strung the bow, he snapped the bow. And the snapping of the bow was so loud, as you see, the sound was knocking people over. Tumultuous sound. So seemingly human-like, but transcendental in his power. He worshipped like a human may worship. Here he's worshipping Lord Shiva and his attempts to get the blessings of Lord Shiva to cross the ocean. But then, although human-like, when he wanted to get the Samudra or Varuna, the god of the ocean, to get his assistance, Varuna didn't come. So, of course, it depends on the version of Ramayana. In the Bhagavatam, it says he just, by his eyes, here this painting is, by sending an arrow into the ocean began to boil. And that takes a lot of heat to boil the ocean.
Just one arrow.
And so all the fish were burning, and they went to Samudra, help! So he came before Lord Ram, folded palms, begging forgiveness for not understanding who he was, and certainly whatever it was that he wanted, to get some assistance to cross the ocean, most happily I'll help make that arrangement. So again, the theme of, although seemingly human-like, his power was not ordinary. the Vishnu Tattva. The second, the Lord whose pure form, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. Bhaktyamam Abhijanati, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, only by devotional service in pure consciousness can one understand him. There are lots of people that saw Ram that didn't understand him, like lots of people that saw Krishna who didn't understand him. The world didn't end. Okay. In the Vedanta, he is described as being one without a second. Because of his spiritual potency, he is untouched by the contamination of material nature. And because he is not subjected to material vision, he is known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has he a material form or name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. Hanuman can tell us about his consciousness. Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, and let us offer our respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet. There's a painting of Sita. You can picture in your mind for a moment Mahavishnu or Garbhodakshay Vishnu and Rama Devi at his feet, or Narayana and Lakshmi at Narayana's feet. So it's the same personality serving the lotus feet. In this case, it's Sita and Ram. And others also had that opportunity. Who is this a painting of? What's his name?
Guha.
Guha. Is that right?
Yeah. When they first came out of a yard here, then to cross the river, they needed a boat, and the king,
King of the tribal people, whose name was
Guha.
Now Guha, because he was a forest dwelling personality, he didn't have high birth, aristocratic family, high education, spoke very nicely, didn't have all those refinements, but he had bhakti. He had great devotion for Ram, and Ram so much appreciated his devotion. When Guha requested to wash his feet and make various offerings to him, just like one worships the Supreme Lord, he worshipped Ram in a befitting way, worshipping the lotus feet. And when Hanuman, there are many paintings you see, when Hanuman is standing before Ram, look closely to see where his eyes are. Just looking at Ram's lotus feet, waiting for some indication from Ram, for some service. And as soon as he hears some service, there he goes. Service for Ram. The third prayer. It was ordained that Ravana, the chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. That gives one reason. Now here's another. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings, that's us, that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient, supreme personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? Mm-hmm. I'll say this in a anecdotal way. Hare Krishna. Okay. 1975, I think. During our Prabhupada began the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival, as far as my memory goes, starting 1974. So it was the second year, 1975, that a man from Andhra Pradesh, uniquely with the name Mr. Reddy, for those of you from Andhra, it's one of the most common names in Andhra, donated some property for building a temple right in Hyderabad. So Prabhupada asked the leaders of the 300-something devotees, 350 devotees, to send 100 devotees with him by train. So Prabhupada rode in the first-class compartment, and a number of us rode, and whatever else was available, from Calcutta to Hyderabad, where we stayed for 1 week. You can read about it in Leelamrita. And there was a pandal program every evening by the university. And the place where we stayed was right on the land. It was really interesting, right in the middle of the city. We just camped out on the land. You know, latrines and outhouses and our sleeping bags. And spent the night there, swatting mosquitoes, and then had a little morning program, and then we would go in Harinam after breakfast, go in Harinam for the middle part of the day, and then in the afternoon we would go to some life member's home for afternoon prasadam, and then in the evening we would go to the pandal program and took part in the pandal with Prabhupada, and went back to rest. We did that for a week. And one of the lunches that we had was at the Mr. Reddy's home. Mr. Reddy lived in a big place with big land and landscaping, and it was very nice. And the arrangement was that Prabhupada and the sannyasis took prasadam inside, and we were just outside the perimeter of the house. And I understood that Prabhupada was having darshan right after lunch. Boys will be boys, huh? Hare Krishna. So, I took prasadam very quickly and went inside to sit with the devotees who were there with Prabhupada. So I got a front row seat. And gradually, the ladies of the house, so they were Prabhupada was in a sitting room, you know, extended, like an extension of the house. And over here was Prabhupada, and at his feet were the sannyasis, and over on the other side, sitting in chairs, were the ladies of the household. And they started asking Prabhupada a Santaswami question. Swamiji, why did Ram make a mistake? What mistake? Well, he went chasing after the deer, and he's omniscient, so why did he make the mistake, Swamiji? Surely he knew the deer must have been not a deer. Swamiji, why did he make a mistake? And Prabhupada was explaining, it wasn't a mistake, it was a lila. But Swamiji, because of that, Sita was kidnapped, and so much trouble came, and he was under great distress, and Sita in the captivity of Ravan, and why did Ramchandra make a mistake? He's just like, kept saying it, and Prabhupada gave different answers, and finally he gave this answer. And so Prabhupada said, Ramchandra was teaching that even if you're the personality of Godhead If you have too much attachment and association of women, you're going to have trouble. And then they continue saying, but Swamiji, why did he make a mistake? And everybody laughed, except the ladies didn't get it, but all the sannyasis got it. There, these ladies were giving Swamiji some trouble. So one of the opulences of the personality of Godhead is detachment. It's one of the six opulences of Bhagavan. I forget where I was somewhere recently, and somebody was asking, I get all the other opulences, but what about the detachment opulence? In Lila, he's showing the reverse, where there's attachment, it's just a time bomb waiting to explode. Okay. When there is undue attachment, and it could work both ways, man for women or women for men, but in this case, men for women, too much undue attachment, one is going to have great difficulty. Because this is Hanuman's logic. How is it possible that Supreme Personality Godhead can be subjected to tribulation? There's another explanation. The other explanation is he's teaching by example. This is what happens. You have difficulty if there's too much attachment. Or you have these two different paintings of Ravana being killed. Both are excellent paintings by the arrow of Ramachandra. And the next prayer, Hanuman says, since Lord Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, he is not attached to anything in this material world. He is the most beloved supersoul of all self-realized souls, and he is their very intimate friend. He is full of all opulences. Therefore, he could not possibly have suffered because of separation from his wife, nor could he have given up his wife and Lakshmana, his younger brother. To give up either would have been absolutely impossible. So this is this Vibhrama Vilas. Seeming error. He, Swamiji, how did Ramchandra make a mistake? Vibhrama Vilas. Seeming error. He wanted to teach. And Hanuman understands this. He's a devotee. He's a very dear devotee. And as a result, he can see the truth. Just like our, at the beginning, the very beginning of the section, ninth canto, chapter 9 and 10, where the pastimes of Ramchandra are described, Shukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Pariksit, my dear king, you have heard the pastimes of Ramchandra again and again. So I'm only going to repeat that portion to you which has been told by the Tattvadarshis. And Prabhupada makes a big point about the importance of hearing from Tattvadarshis, because otherwise that which is transcendental and beyond the scope of worldly conception can't be explained or understood unless one is a Tattvadarshi, as one is seeing through the lens of mundane sensibility and a material conception of life. What are they going to see? Not only bad and blurry, but wrong. Swamiji, why did Ramchandra make a mistake? But Hanuman isn't one of those persons. He's a realized soul, or in the language of that ninth canto verse, the Tattvadarshi. So he's in two verses now. He's saying the same thing. He didn't suffer. Read the verses of Ramayana, and boy, is he suffering. When Sita's gone, he goes mad, searching for Sita and grieving. But what is that? It's not suffering that we know. Oh, you know, he lost her or she lost him, and woo, 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 singing the blues. Not like that. Not like that. It's a transcendental expression of ecstasy, of love. Hanuman understands that, and he's helping us understand that. And specifically, even, it's not possible he could have suffered, nor could he have experienced their separation. Could he have given up his wife? But he gave up his wife. It's very clear. Sita was sent to the ashram of Valmiki. That's a lila. This is something that we need to understand. It's deep. But Hanuman is telling us it's not possible to have given up his wife. But it's a lila in which he gave up his wife. It's a two things minimally. One is it's a mood of love and separation, and it's a lila to permit or display that love and separation. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, he uses this language. There's nitya lila, pastime that Krishna performs in Goloka, and there's naimittika lila, the occasional pastimes, the ones that he performs here that aren't there, like the birth pastime, like the killing of demons pastimes. There's no demons. And another example that he gives is Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. In Goloka, there's no leaving Vrindavan. There's the mood of feeling separation from Krishna. You hear in Nectar Devotion when the cowherd boys, they're going through the forest, and Krishna's on one side of the tree and they're on the other side of the tree, and the not seeing Krishna for that time it takes to cross the tree, it's like 12 years or more has passed, just like we find in Shikshastakam for the gopis. Separation from Krishna is like 12 years or more. That's the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For a moment, the intensity of love is so great. So there's a sense of separation. Here it appears it's a pastime of separation. Hanuman is telling us it's not possible for Ram to give up Sita or Lakshman or and Lakshman. To give them up would have been absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible. He's disclosing some very wonderful understanding about Ram's pastime. But surely, there's the pastime of separation. Who's pictured here? Mantara. Mantra is the hunchback who is advising the innocent, unsophisticated, and quite stubborn Kaikeyi. You foolish woman! We got a chorus over here. Why are you so happy celebrating? Don't you know you're bringing destruction to yourself and to your son Bharat and so forth and so on? And after convincing Kaikeyi of her diabolical plan to invoke the promise for two boons from Dasarath, Ram is banished to the forest. Beautiful painting. The residents of Ayodhya pleading with Ram to stay. But there he goes into the forest. And entering into the forest, enjoying forest life very much together, Sita. So many beautiful descriptions of appreciating the flowers, the colors, the fragrances, the bees, the sounds of the birds, the light coming through the trees, the sounds of the streams, the waterfalls and the swans, and the natural beauty of forest life. Sita's very, very happy in this circumstance. And the forms of life, appreciating the beauty of all the different animals and birds. And so when finally, many years later in the forest, seeing the golden deer, Sita develops a fancy, thinking, oh, wouldn't it be nice? Only one more year we're going to be back in Ayodhya, and to have this beautiful deer in the royal gardens. Just see, the deer is changing colors from golden to rainbow, and so many, oh, Ram, see if you can get the deer and then bring the deer back with us to Ayodhya. And Lakshman is, no way. This is a rakshasa trick. Who had ever seen a deer like that? That's not a deer. That's some trick to simply cause us some difficulty. Don't go, Ram. Ram said, if it's a demon, no problem, I'll kill the demon. And if it's a deer, then I'll bring the deer back. You stay here and guard Sita. I'll be back in a jiffy. There's the circle around the ashram drawn by Ram's bow, requesting Sita not to cross that circle. And sure enough, Ravan comes disguised as a mendicant Brahmana, asking for alms. And Mother Sita, being a cultured woman, naturally wants to provide alms for the Brahmana. But he speaks in such a way that's not how a Brahmana would normally speak. But Sita is very kind, and she crosses that line, and Ravana grabs Sita. Not a very handsome looking person in this picture. And with his chariot, he goes soaring into the air, and Jatayu, look at the claws of Jatayu, taking one of the animals in his claws, a big bird, fighting against Ravana. And Ravana cuts his wings with his sword. This is Sita throwing down her jewels, crossing Rishimukh Mountain, so that the vanaras at the top of Rishimukh can perhaps one day tell Ram which way she went. Ram and Lakshman finding Jatayu, although he's just a beast, the great sacrifice he made to try to protect Sita, Ram respects that service so much. Picture showing the soul of Jatayu leaving, heading for the spiritual realm. They're performing his funeral ceremony. Sita being tormented by Ravana. Of course, eventually they make their way back to Ayodhya, and Ram becomes... So, there's Hanuman looking at the lotus feet of Ram. So his verse is saying there's not even the slightest possibility that Sita could be taken and Ram could suffer. So he's appreciating overall the Leela aspect. And this is because he's the personality of Godhead. I thought to put this painting. It's the Sadbhuj form of the Supreme Lord, where two arms showing Krishna holding his flute, two arms showing Ram holding his bow and arrows, and two arms showing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu holding his danda and kamandalu. So they're all Vishnu Tattva. Remember? Vishnu Tattva, forms of Vishnu, or the personality of Godhead. Actually the same personality, simply exhibiting different aspects of his identity in Leela. And just two more verses and we're done. One cannot, Hanuman says, one cannot establish a friendship with the Supreme Lord Ramachandra on the basis of material qualities, such as one's birth in an aristocratic family, one's personal beauty, one's eloquence, one's sharp intelligence, or one's superior race or nation. None of these qualifications is actually a prerequisite for friendship with Lord Sri Ramachandra. Otherwise, how is it possible that although we, uncivilized inhabitants of the forest, have not taken noble births, although we have no physical beauty, and although we cannot speak like gentlemen, Lord Ramachandra has nevertheless accepted us as friends? This wonderful embrace when Hanuman comes back, informing Ram that he found Sita. And Ram is so pleased with Hanuman, this warmest of embraces, the two, the servant and the servitor, embracing like this. Very wonderful. So, but it's not just Hanuman who is in the monkey race. The conclusion of that prayer, picture it this way. Here's a painting of Ramachandra and Lakshmana being shown the cloth with Sita's ornaments. The monkey with his leaning against the tree, it's Sugriva because he's got his crown on. And Hanuman is showing, and because there are some bears also. And after seeing the plight of Ram, Sugriva is feeling great compassion, and Sugriva is also in the similar condition where his wife has been taken from him wrongly by Vali. So over this fire they take vows of friendship, just like vows of marriage in a similar way. Formal vows. They will, to the end of their life, assist one another in friendship. So the friendship between Ram and Sugriva. And carrying out that service to Ram is Hanuman, after finding Sita and setting the city of Lanka on fire using his powers given to him by Vayu. Hanuman is returning back to give the word to Ram, come quickly, Sita is in difficulty. Here he's sitting by the edge of the ocean, seeing the city of Lanka on fire. Another personality who Ramchandra gave shelter to was Vibhishan, pictured here. Vibhishan, who is Vibhishan? No. Don't blurt it out. Because you raised your hand and didn't speak, I'll call on you. Who is Vibhishan?
The brother of Ravana.
Okay. Older or younger?
Younger.
Younger. And what else do you know about him? He didn't agree with Ravan.
Yeah, he didn't want Sita, because Sita was already married to
Ravana. Yeah. But he advised his brother in many, many, many ways. He advised him in ordinary duty. When Ravan had captured Hanuman and had him brought before the royal assembly, and Hanuman spoke so boldly and strongly, Ravan was infuriated. He said, "Kill him!" And Vibhishan gave the advice, "You can't do that. It's not the codes of a king. When a messenger comes on behalf of another before the king can't kill the messenger. If you feel that he's acted in a certain way that a suitable punishment, you can do that. But you can't kill him. It's against the codes of conduct." So he was advising his brother in codes of conduct and dharma, but ultimately in the destruction of the whole dynasty of Ravana. And when he realized something very similar, different, but something very similar to when Vidura understood his advice to Dhritarashtra was he had done his best. It wasn't going to go any further. He left. So Vibhishan left and went to the place where Ram was standing, as we see the four personalities standing on top of this little hill. And one of the four personalities was Sugriva. And Sugriva was very suspicious. I don't trust him. He's a brother of Ravana. He's been in the association with the cruelest, meanest, vilest personalities. He's his brother. I don't trust him. He must have some motive. So, Ram, in an exemplary manner, he consulted various ministers. This one said this, and that one said that, and the other one said another thing, and you know how it is. Then he consulted Hanuman, and Hanuman was very clear. Hanuman said, a minister is obliged to understand the mind of a man by seeing his face and listening to his voice. And by seeing the face of Vibhishan, I see no malice and no ill intent. And hearing the sound of his voice, I'm convinced we can trust him. Supposing he has some motivation. Supposing he wants the kingdom of his brother. He knows that his brother is sinful and his brother will be destroyed because of that sinful quality. So he's come to you and he's taking shelter of you. Give him shelter. And Ram says, you're right. A very important verse, a very famous verse from Ramayana. Here's where it comes, right at this particular point. Ram says, I declare it boldly forever and ever. One who takes shelter of me even once with sincerity, I promise I'll give this person protection. Very famous verse. So even he's from a sinful background, at least his family, the Ravana family, his father was a Brahmana, but his brother was a very bad person. So regardless of the background of an individual, someone who is sincerely taking shelter is to be accepted. This is what Hanuman is indicating. And just a little nice embellishment. These four, he came with four ministers. And some of our acharyas comment, I'll share the comment, that the four ministers indicate aspects of surrender. Because that's what is being spoken about, is surrendering to Ramachandra. And they explain that in the process of surrender, there's two. There's the one who is surrendering, and there's one who is being surrendered unto. And for the one who is surrendering, there's two qualifications needed. One of those qualifications that's needed, akinchanatvam. Queen Kunti uses this phrase also, akinchana, having no material shelter. Tvam is having the quality of. Akinchanatvam, having the quality of no material shelter. And the other quality is ananya gatitvam, having no other shelter but one, but the personality of Godhead. Having no material shelters and having genuine, sincere shelter in the qualified person, in this case, Lord Ramachandra. And the person who is being surrendered unto is two. Saralata means simplicity. In this case, Ramachandra isn't discriminating. A monkey, a vulture, later we're going to, in a moment, a squirrel, a demon, or at least a family of demons. He's not considering one's background and all of that. He's considering the sincerity of one's submission, simplicity. And the other is Shakti. He has the power to give protection to one who gives, takes shelter there. So this is another painting of Vibhishan coming. The Vanaras not trusting, but Ram telling them, no, accept him as one of us. And Vibhishan is part of the battle against his brother Ravan. When they're building the bridge to Lanka, you see in the distance is Lanka. It's an 80-mile-away distance. One of the personalities who's assisting, you see in the lower left corner, what's that?
Squirrel.
So Hanuman is telling the squirrel, get out of the way, we're building a bridge, you're in the way. And Ram stops him and says, no, why are you speaking like this? Because he's doing as much as you are. According to his capacity, he's doing his fullest capacity, and one who's doing their fullest capacity, they should be respected and honored. Don't tell them go away. So there's the Vanaras walking on the bridge, heading towards Lanka, and Ram offering his appreciation to the squirrel for his nice service. So the background, this is a theme or an essence of Ramchandra's quality. He accepts whoever takes shelter of him sincerely. That means even us. And he'll give his protection. Another painting of Guha in a boat taking Ram across the Ganges. And because of his sincere service, Ram accepted him as his devotee. Who's that?
Shabari.
Yeah. Who is she?
She's like that.
Wait.
She's a great devotee of Lord Ram.
She's a great devotee of Lord Ram. I think you are too. Shabari was a forest dweller like Guha. Guha was the king of the forest dwellers, and Shabari's father was a hunter. His livelihood was killing animals in the forest. So when she grew up and it was time for her marriage, her father arranged a marriage and was going to have a big marriage ceremony. So he arranged for all kinds of goats and sheep to come and be slaughtered so they could have a big feast. And when she saw that, she left before the wedding even took place. She didn't want to take part in this at all. She went wandering through the forest looking for some saintly association, and by the will of providence, she found the hermitage of the sage, what's his name? Matanga? Ring a bell? Yeah, kind of. Okay. And he was very merciful. He allowed her to stay in that place where there are many other sages. One of the descriptions is as they were so elevated, when they would go to the river to get water, or Lake Hampa, as they were carrying their water, and some water would spill from their pitchers, wherever it would land, flowers would grow that would never stop blooming. These were powerful sages. Many, many nice descriptions of the beauty of this hermitage of sage Matanga. And when he was of elderly age and was ready to leave this world, she wanted to go with him into entering into the fire at the end of his life. But he said, no, you stay, because soon the personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra, is going to come right to this very location, and you should wait and serve him. Be prepared. Someday later he'll come. So she made it her business to gather berries and whatever wild things that were growing, put them in a basket, and make the area around the cottage, around the hermitage of Sage Matanga, very nice. Just waiting for Ram to come. She swept the path, removed all little stones and pebbles and thorns, just waiting every day. This was her sadhana. Just waiting for Ram to come. And this went on for days and weeks and years. And she continued very faithfully waiting for Ram to come. And one day, whoops, I moved some paintings. What happened? Uh-oh, I took them out. Anyway, he came. He came. And she was... I mean, it's like doing your deity worship every morning. One day, the Lord will speak with you. When Prabhupada did the deity installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish, it's exactly what he said. So you should serve the deity very nicely, with all humility and very carefully. You serve him in this personal way, and one day he will speak with you. And he will say, I am like this. So that's what Shabari was doing. And Ram came and spoke with her and said, I am like this. And she fed him these wild fruits and berries and roots. And he was so pleased with her devotion, he blessed her that she would return to the spiritual world. Here's the last verse. Therefore, whether one is a demigod or a demon, a man or a creature other than a man, such as a beast or bird, everyone should worship Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears on this earth just like a human being. There is no need of great austerities or penances to worship the Lord, for he accepts even a small service offered by his devotee. Thus, he is satisfied. And as soon as he is satisfied, the devotee is successful. Indeed, Lord Ramachandra brought all the devotees of Ayodhya back home, back to Godhead. Except for one, Ram. He gave him some service to stay behind. So here's the coronation scene of Ramachandra. Here he's returning in the Pushpaka, Vimana, back to Ayodhya. And the residents of Ayodhya receiving him very happily, descending from the Vimana. There's beautiful painting. Kushalya's beginning to rise from her royal seat, and the other queens also, and the residents of Ayodhya very happy to receive Ram back for so many years of being exiled from Ayodhya, crowned as the king of Ayodhya. And then the rest of Ramayana continues from there. Okay. So, New York time, it's 5 minutes after midnight. So, I'm going to end in more ways than one. I'm surprised I made it this far. And I brought with me, I came from Potomac Temple. I was there for the Sunday program and for the weekend. And I asked the pujaris to give me some Mahaprasadam from Radha Madan Mohan. So I want to distribute that Mahaprasadam. You have it? And then I'm going to disappear for the night, if that's all right. We normally would have a kirtan and things like that, but I think I'm finished. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Jai. Gaur Premanandi. Jai.